Stepping inside the front office, I nod at one of the receptionists. "Mason Laurent," I tell her.
"You can go in."
She gestures to my left, but I already know where to go. Walking up to the door, I knock twice, feeling my hands shake just slightly as I push it open.
"Hi, Mason,"
the principal greets, looking up from her desk and smiling. She stacks a large pile of folders, clearing a space on her desk and stands up, holding out her hand for me to shake. I lock my jaw tight and straighten my back. Her eyes are warm, and I suddenly don't want to be here. I force myself forward, slowly raising my hand and taking hers, but letting go nearly immediately. I shift my eyes to the side. She's silent for a moment, and I can tell she's watching me.
"Please sit down,"
she says finally. I take the seat in front of her desk and keep my gaze averted, making eye contact only briefly.
"Don't worry,"
she tells me, humor lacing her voice. "You're not in trouble. I just like to try to meet everyone when they register, but you slipped under my radar."
"Okay. That's good news, I guess.
So, how are you liking Falcon's Well so far?" I unclench my jaw, replying flatly, "Fine."
"And your classes?"
she presses.
"Are you finding the transition easy?"
Her eyes won't leave me, and I shift in my seat, nodding as I stare at the picture frame she has on her desk. I remember seeing them the other night. Pictures of her family.
"Well?"
she keeps going, starting to sound uncomfortable.
"There's so little time left in the school year, but judging from your records and your grades, you should have no trouble passing your finals."
She flips through transcripts and forms from my fake file, no doubt.
"Are you looking at colleges?"
I shake my head.
"Well, we have a great college career center here. The counselor can help you make some decisions about where you're going after high school and see about getting applications in."
I nod, and we both just sit there, the silence growing more awkward. She clearly wants to be attentive, but is probably figuring out whether or not I'm worth the effort when I'll be out of her school in 6 weeks. Sooner, actually, but she doesn't know that. She inhales a deep breath and softens her voice.
"Trey Burrows is my stepson,"
she points out.
"He can be a handful, but he's my handful. Let me know if you have any more problems, okay?"
"He's my handful." I squeeze my fists, finally raising my eyes to hers. "Don't worry, lady, I know exactly how to handle my problems. Your son will stay out of my way, or I'll make him stay out of my way." She smiles, and I stand up, not waiting to be dismissed. I walk out of her office, feeling my stomach uncurl and taking in quick, shallow breaths when the adrenaline finally hits me, coursing down my arms and legs. Once outside the office doors, standing in the empty hallway, I stop and smile to myself. She didn't find me out. Not only can I leave whenever I want, but I can stay as long as I like. No one knows. Chapter 8. Misha.
"You're just smearing it,"
an amused voice says behind me. I turn my head to see Ryan standing with her back to her open locker, smirking. I take my hand away from the back of my neck, throwing the wet paper towel in the trash next to the water fountain. While I thought I wouldn't care about having "needle, dick, douchebag, asshole" written on my neck for everyone to see, I was wrong. I feel like an idiot. She turns and reaches into her locker, pulling out a long piece of fabric.
"Wanna borrow a scarf?"
She laughs, and I arch an eyebrow, unamused. Glancing into her locker, I see the bottle she loaned the janitor this morning back on the shelf, and I walk over. Nail polish remover, now. But she simply folds her arms over her chest and positions herself in front of her locker, not budging. "Don't play with me." I hold out my hand. "We've been keeping our shit PG. I can go R if you want." She twists up her lips and lets out a small sigh.
"Fine. I can pick my battles, I guess."
She twists around and takes out the bottle, flinging it toward me. I catch it and twist off the cap, quickly pulling the scarf out of her hands too.
Hey!
But it's too late.
I dump some of the acetone onto the soft beige fabric and use it to rub the pen off on the back of my neck.
Bastard!
She cries out.
That's cashmere!
I pull the scarf away from my neck, seeing the black ink now on her scarf and off my neck. At least most of it, I think.
Yeah. I toss the scarf back to her and cap the bottle.
It works great, thanks.
She twists up her face in anguish and holds up the scarf with both hands, inspecting the damage. I set the bottle back on her shelf and walk off before we have time to get into it again. I hear her let out a little growl behind me and slam her locker shut as I make my way for the front of the school. I need to stop challenging her, despite the amusement I feel. Engaging her is just too easy. Why, when I walk into this building, is she the first thought that comes to my mind and not the real reason I'm here? If she hadn't happened upon my spot at the Cove and stolen my shit that night, I might never have crossed her path here. Maybe we would have been in some of the same classes while I lurked quietly around, waiting to take care of business, but I never intended to... No, that's not right. I knew better. I kind of knew this would happen, and I knew I was walking into a temptation. I knew Ryan would be here. I knew I would see her and hear her, and I knew my attention would be drawn to her. Because despite everything else on my mind, I wouldn't be able to contain my curiosity. And then, when I found out she was popular, not an outcast, and a cardboard cutout, not at all original, I became angry. She led me to believe those things, and my muse was a lie. Until yesterday, in the parking lot, when I bit and she bit back. That's my Ryan, and I want to see more. I take out my keys and glance around me, checking the windows of the main house. I didn't see my dad's car in the driveway, but it could be in the garage, too. Since he deals in antiques and art, owning a few shops along the coast, his schedule is flexible. He can be gone all day or home at any time. I unlock the guest house door and step inside, closing it behind me. It's not even noon, so it's still light out, but I blacked out most of the windows when I moved in here after Annie's death. I take out my small flashlight and switch it on. I don't want to turn on the big light in case my dad sees. Most of my clothes and belongings are still here, and since Dane wants to grill me every time I mooch off his washer and dryer, I decided to come back here and pick up some more stuff to avoid his third degree this time. I left school after the scarf thing with Ryan, leaving my truck in the parking lot and taking the ferry to Thunder Bay. I didn't want my dad or anyone else we know to spot my car. He doesn't know where I am, and I'd like to keep it that way. It isn't like he's called either. Digging a duffel bag out of the closet, I empty drawers and stuff the clothes in the bag, bringing a folded t-shirt to my nose. The scent brings needles to my throat. Annie's fabric softener. She was good about doing the laundry since my dad was busy and I always did it wrong. I complained about the flowery scent she used for my clothes, but now I close my eyes feeling only home. I made sure to keep using it after she was gone. Nothing would change. We would never change anything she did. Annie. I blink, feeling my eyes water. I finish gathering the clothes I need and pack an extra pair of shoes as well as the pictures of Annie and me that I have taped to the wall above my desk. I pass my guitar, resting on the stand, and a pile of our band's posters that never got used. 3 months ago, I had three things I loved: my music, my sister, and... Everything empties from my lungs, and I turn away from the guitar, unable to look at the fucking thing. It doesn't matter what I had. Annie's gone now. My words are gone, and Ryan's... I don't know what she is. And that's when it occurs to me. I got a letter from her last week. She's probably sent me another one by now, since she writes like I breathe air. Not that I ever minded, though. They were the best things to come home to. I leave the guest house, carrying the duffel bag and locking up behind me. I notice that everything seems darker, and I look up and see thunderclouds hovering low. Shit. Did I leave the windows down in my truck? I better get back to school. Falcon's Well might not get hit with the rain, but it's possible. I hurry to the back door of the main house and unlock it, dashing inside. The kitchen is dark, so my dad must be out. Heading over to the counter, I find the pile of mail, all of it mine, and immediately scan for a smoky black envelope with a skull seal. But I don't find one. There's nothing there but college brochures and credit card applications. Has she stopped writing me then? Relax, dude. You came home last week and checked, and there was a letter there. It's only been 6 days. But I'm curious to see if she writes about Mason. What will she say about him? Ryan rarely ever mentions another guy in her letters. After the one she told me about when she was 16, the one she lowered her standards for, she seems to have kept guys at a distance. In fact, it's almost like she's lost interest, because she told me that foreplay is overrated in a letter once. I told her I might consider that a challenge. After all, 7 years of writing letters is epic foreplay, and she's addicted. 6 days. My last letter from her was 6 days ago. Her last letter from me was over 3 months ago. I made her promise never to stop writing me, and she never has. She remains constant, even despite the lack of faith she must have by now that I'll ever write her again. My shoulders slump a little, thinking about how she's always been there for me. Her bullshit pisses me off, but to Misha, she's been a friend. And a very good one. Annie would be disappointed in me if I treated badly the only person left who loved everything about me. God damn it. Fuck. I let out a hard sigh and walk into the hallway, rounding the banister and jogging up the stairs. Approaching my sister's room, I slowly twist the doorknob and enter. Her smell and the remnants of her carpet freshener suddenly wafting over me. My heart aches, seeing everything the way she left it, tidy and ready for her to come home from her jog that night. A bed she would never sleep in again. Makeup she would never touch again. Assignments that lay unfinished on her desk. An ache lodges in my throat and I feel like I want to scream. Annie, what were you thinking? But then I'm angry with myself too. And my dad. How did we not see it? Why didn't we take care of her better? I walk slowly over to her dresser and open drawers carefully and quietly, as if she'll come bursting in at any moment, scolding me for being in her room. When I open the top drawer of her chest, I see her scarves folded neatly and stacked in two piles. I smell her perfume, and my chest shakes with a sob that I force back down as I sift through, finding one that feels like Ryan's. It's not beige, but it's cashmere. I feel a moment's guilt, but my sister would rather Ryan have it than let it sit in her empty room. Forgotten. I pull out the light blue scarf and close the drawer, sticking it in my duffel bag. Hello? I hear a muffled call from the hallway. I jerk my head toward the doorway, recognizing the voice. My father. Shit. I look around, knowing there's no other way out of here. I slip behind the privacy screen my sister put up as a decoration by the wall and lock my teeth together to calm my breathing. I see a shadow block out the hallway light streaming through the doorway and falling on the carpet. Misha? My father asks hesitantly. Are you here? He knows I'm here. He has to. I left Annie's door open when I came in, and it's always closed, but I don't move. I can't talk to him. I peer through the holes in the screen trying to see him, but I can't. He's not in my eyesight. He doesn't say anything more, but I watch as his shadow falls farther into the room, my pulse pounding in my ears. He enters my sight as he sits at the end of the bed, wearing his usual shirt, tie, and sweater vest. He used to dress me like that when I was a kid. Until I turned 9 and started having an opinion. That was the beginning of our fighting. You were always so different, he says, staring off. I can barely breathe. T-shirts and jeans to family functions. Guitar lessons instead of the violin or piano. Always so difficult to get motivated for anything other than what you wanted to do. Always so difficult. Period. My eyes water, but I don't budge. He's right. In his head, I thought about everything. I made arguments where there weren't any. In my head, I just wanted him to accept me. That's why I held onto Ryan so hard for so long. I stopped being able to talk to you, he nearly whispers. And then he drops his eyes, correcting. I stopped finding a way to talk to you. He picks up my sister's blanket at the end of the bed and slowly brings it to his nose, and then his body immediately shakes as he lets out a sob. I pull my lip ring in between my teeth and tug until I feel a sting. Everything hurts, and I hate this. I hate that Annie's room is empty. I hate that our house is dark. I hate that I don't know where I'm supposed to be. I don't belong anywhere. And I hate that I hate he's alone. He didn't comfort me after Annie's death. Why should I want to be here for him? And why do I feel a sudden need to tell Ryan everything? For her to know what I haven't said and to tell me just the right thing, just like she does in her letters. To forget Falcon's Well and what I'm doing there. To go back, simply because that's where she is. I make it back to the school just as the final bell is ringing. The rain had started in Thunder Bay just as I jumped on the ferry, but it still held off here. The clouds threatening, but not giving in yet. My father left Annie's room as soon as he started crying, and once I heard the hums of Brahms coming from his office, I knew it was safe to get out of the house. He'd be in there the rest of the night drinking scotch and working on his model World War II battlefield. I can see the soccer team practicing on the field off to my right, and I hook the duffel bag over my head, hanging it across my chest. Digging the scarf out of my bag, I reach into Ryan's Jeep and set it on the driver's seat. I pull my Sharpie out of my pocket and look around, pulling out a small piece of paper I spot in a cup holder. I leave a note on the back of the receipt. You'll look better in blue. And no, I didn't steal it. I drop it on top of the scarf as students start flooding the parking lot and climbing into their cars. It's Friday afternoon, so I doubt Ryan has any team practices, but I keep an eye on her Jeep anyway as I head to my truck, making sure no one tries to take it out of the open cab. I toss my duffel in the bed of my truck, but suddenly look up, noticing people crowding around my hood. At the front of my vehicle. They stare at something and unease coils its way through my body. What now? Gasps and whispers fill the air and more people head over. I charge to the front of the truck and stop, finding a whole fucking mess. Large circles of white paint are splattered on my hood, shooting out in all directions and spilling down the sides as if someone took a paintball gun and used the car for target practice. Some of it is already dried, which means it was done a while ago, probably right after I left campus. And right in the middle, on top of the hood, in big white letters, is the word FAG, sitting bright and loud, glaring back at me. Rage heats up every single muscle in my body. Motherfucker. I raise my eyes, anger and readiness boiling under my skin as I let my gaze slowly scan the parking lot. I spot Trey Burrows near what I assume is his car, a blue Camaro that his doting little stepmommy probably bought him. I ignore the people gathering around and narrow my eyes, seeing him stroll around all cocky, chewing on a straw and shooting Lila a lascivious glance that his best friend probably doesn't see. I take off, stalking right for him. I dig in my heels, ready to slam his fucking face into the hood of his fucking car. I'm almost glad he's picking a fight right now. I've wanted to hit something all day. I hear someone call Mason, but I don't stop to find out who. I lunge straight for him and grab his collar, throwing him around and slamming him up against his car. He growls, taking my jaw in his hand and trying to push me off, but I twist away from him and swing my fist back, landing a punch in his stomach. I hear screams and shouts around me, feeling a crowd close in, and I quickly grab him again, slamming him against the car. Fuck you, faggot!
He bursts out, swinging his fist back and knocking me in the face. The metallic taste of blood seeps into my mouth from the inside of my cheek, but I still don't release my hold on him.
Can't take a joke,
he yells. I bring my knee up, hitting him in his stomach. He hunches over and I raise my fist high, pounding down on the back of his head twice.
Mason, stop!
I hear someone yell and I think it's Ryan. I grab him by the collar again and throw him down on the ground, sweat covering my back and my lungs begging for air. But before I can get to him and land another hit, hands grab my upper arms and haul me back. I struggle against the hold, and the guy holding me stumbles forward, trying to keep a grip on me as I glare at Trey.
What's going on?
A woman barks.
It took you long enough!
Trey snarls at the guy behind me, and I gather it must be JD, his friend, holding me back. The principal appears between us, looking at me as Trey pushes himself off the ground.
Calm down, she orders me.
I breathe hard, dragging in air through my nose. Every muscle in my body is tight, and I keep my eyes on Trey as the arms behind me finally let go.
What happened?
Burroughs demands, looking between us.
I didn't do anything, Trey shouts. This asshole shows up and jumps on me.
She looks to me for an answer, but I don't say anything. Everyone stands around us, their attention held captivated. A few people putting away their phones now that the principal is here, and I can't help but let out a small smile, seeing a drop of blood at the corner of Trey's mouth.
Whose car is that?
The principal questions, gesturing to my truck off to the right. But Trey and I are locked in a stare, both of us refusing to say anything. She seems to draw her own conclusions, though, because she looks at Trey, her voice turning stern. You will get a bucket and a hose, and you will clean every inch of it, both of you. That better not be permanent paint.
But
now, she cuts him off. And I warned you what would happen if you pulled anything else.
It wasn't him, Mrs. Burroughs.
I blink, hearing Ryan's voice. The principal stops and turns toward her.
Trey's just covering for me,
Ryan says. I hear her voice off to the side somewhere, but I refuse to look at her. What the hell is she doing? I might believe she'd vandalize my car, but to write fag on the hood? Not a chance.
Excuse me?
Burroughs asks her.
Yeah.
Ryan goes on.
It was a stupid prank. I'm sorry.
Voices sound off around us as everyone starts whispering, and I blink long and hard. Her prom date was about to get in trouble, and she couldn't let that happen, could she? It would just be too humiliating to show up to prom alone. Stupid girl.
You did that to his car.
It was a joke. Brian's voice is calm and convincing.
I'll take care of it. I'll take it for a car wash and pay for it right now. Hell no,
Trey chimes in.
Just shut up.
Ryan snaps at him and then lowers her voice. I'll be right back. I don't wait to be dismissed. I shoot Trey one last scowl and walk away, the crowd of students clearing as I head to my truck. I dig my keys out of my pockets and yank open the door, climbing in. This isn't over. Ryan climbs in the passenger side, dropping her bag on the floor, and I can feel her eyes on me. I bite my tongue, too fucking angry to deal with her right now. I start the engine and lay on the horn, barely waiting for the noisy little shits to move their fucking asses before I step on the gas. Students squeal and rush out of the way as I speed out of the parking lot, putting as much distance as possible between me and everyone there. Everyone except Ryan. I pull out onto the road while light sprinkles of rain hit the windshield, and I stare at the paint and shit all over my hood, my hands gripping the steering wheel. I'm going to kill him.
Here,
Ryan says. I don't want this. I'm glaring ahead, but I shoot a glance over, seeing her hold up Annie's blue scarf. She must have seen it in her Jeep before the fight happened.
Just take it, I bite out. It was a dick move, ruining yours. I owed you. I don't want it, she insists, and tosses it at me.
Another girl's perfume is on it, so you should let your skank know she left it in your backseat. I shake my head. Bitch. I take the scarf and stuff it in the center console. Fine. I grit out. It was on the tip of my tongue to tell her, to let her know that it was my sister's and somehow I liked the idea of Ryan having a part of her. And what a dumb idea that was. Because why would I want a vile brat like her to put her hands on anything that belonged to Annie? But I would never show her weakness. I never want her pity. I take a left on Whitney and drive down the road, sparsely populated with a few gas stations and trees, and pull into a self-service car wash, parking it in one of the empty bays. Actually, they're all empty since it's raining. The light sprinkle has turned heavier now, and the sky looms with dark clouds rolling on top of each other and sending down a steady shower. The white noise actually feels good. My heart and breathing starts to slow, and I roll up my window and turn off the engine, but keep Mud Shovel playing on the radio. We sit there silently. Neither of us moving. I look to Ryan. Well?
Well, what?
I lean back, locking my hands behind my head and relaxing. You're the one who fucked up the car. She frowns.
You know I didn't.
Yeah, I know. I reply, amusement lacing my voice. And it's real touching and all you taking the fall for your man, but you're washing it. Her lips twist into a little snarl, and I catch half an eye roll. She pushes open the door, plops down onto the ground, and slams the door shut, heading up to the display on the wall and digging in her pocket. I close my eyes, leaning my head back in my hands and try to quiet my head. I'm suddenly so tired. Ever since I can remember, I've had others' voices in my head, trying to tell me what to do. I fought back, stood up for myself, and I've been proud of the decisions I've made, but that doesn't mean I haven't had doubts. My dad and why he can't love me as much as my sister. The guys at my school who thought it was cooler to play sports and bang 5 girls a weekend. My mother, and how she left when I was 2 and Annie was 1, and maybe the reason she left was because she didn't want us. I'm glad I never listened to others' voices in my head, but I still hear them. They're still noisy, and I'm still walking against the wind.
Don't change,
Ryan wrote in a letter once. There's no one like you, and I can't love you if you stop being you. I guess I shouldn't say that, but I'm a little drunk right now. Just came back from a party when I saw your letter, but what the hell? I don't care. You knew I loved you, right? You're my best friend. So don't ever change. This is a big-ass world, and when we leave our small towns, we're going to find our tribe. If we don't stay true to ourselves, how will they recognize us? Both of us. Because you know we're in the same tribe, right? And even if it's just the two of us, it will be the best. God, I loved her. Whenever my worries or anger got the best of me, she always said just the right thing to put everything in perspective. There were times growing up that I felt aggravated or tortured by her letters, especially when she'd talk about Twilight or how Matt Walst was just as good of a lead singer for 3 Days Grace as Adam Gontier. I mean, what the fuck? But I never felt bad after reading a letter from her. Never. I hear spray hit the car and I open my eyes, finding her in front of the truck, blurry through the water she's shooting onto the windshield. Why did she never take the advice she so readily gave me? I keep my hands locked behind my head and watch her, moving around the hood and fanning the hose up and down, spraying every inch. I notice some of the paint coming up and running down the truck as she tries to remove as much shit with the hose as possible. Then she releases the handle, stopping the flow, and drops the gun to the ground. Grabbing the hem of her loose black shirt, she pulls it over her head, revealing a thin white tank top with glimpses of a dark pink bra peeking out from underneath. Heat floods my groin, and I feel it start to swell. Shit. She walks to the passenger side door, opens it, and barely glances at me before she tosses her shirt inside and slams the door closed again. Taking the brush with the long handle off the wall, she shuffles her feet, like she's taking off her sandals and heads for the front of the truck, stepping up on the bumper.
I didn't think of that. She's probably too short to be able to scrub the middle of the hood if she stands on the ground. Maybe I should help her. But I look out the windshield, streaked with water, and see her beautiful body leaning forward over the hood, scrubbing so hard her breasts shake just enough to send me reeling. This was a bad idea, and I can't take my eyes off her. Her tanned thighs bob against the grill as her tank top rises up with the exertion, and I can see inches of toned stomach, her hair hanging around her, and her chest in perfect view. My cock starts to grow hard, and I want her in here, not out there. I want her straddling my lap, close, and in my hands. She jumps down and rounds the car to my side, stepping up again, this time on the tire. Leaning into the hood right in front of me, she scrubs the paint off, the small muscles in her arms flexing and her scowl getting deeper the harder she works. My eyes flash to her stomach again, and my hands are begging to touch her skin there. What a double-edged sword. Am I angry she's a fake, weak-ass little liar? Yes. But am I happy she's also got the body of a porn star? Hell, yes. She doesn't have to talk for me to look. All of a sudden, I see her turn her head and I meet her eyes, hers looking like she wants to kick me in the nuts. She flips me a middle finger, seeing me watching her, and I start laughing to myself. Trey is nearly forgotten, for the moment. She hops down and takes the brush back to the wall, and then she picks the hose up off the ground again. Spraying the truck, she washes away all of the paint, the white-tinted water spilling off the hood and onto the ground. I close my eyes again, enjoying the sound of the rain and the water covering the truck. But something cold and wet suddenly hits my face and I jerk, opening my eyes. Ryan stands on the passenger side, spraying the side of the truck and hitting the inch-wide slit in the window left open on the passenger side door. Damn it. She fans the hose, spraying more, and I growl as water splatters all over the inside of the cab and the leather seats. Shit! I yell, opening my door and jumping out. Knock it off! My black t-shirt is damp, and I round the truck, glaring at her. She casually sprays the hood of the car, pretending to whistle.
What? What'd I do?
Give me the hose. I hold out my hand. She shrugs, feigning innocence.
I didn't know the window was down. Water can be dried. Relax.
I stalk toward her, because she's the one with the weapon. Give me the hose. She purses her lips, clearly trying to hide a smile.
Come and get it.
I inch toward her, knowing she's going to spray me, but maybe if I'm quick, I can... All of a sudden, she swings the gun toward me and sprays, the cold water hitting my arms, hands, and making my shirt stick to my chest. I growl, lunging for her, and she squeals, throwing the gun at me and yanking open the back door. I pick up the gun from where it dropped and swing around the door, seeing her lying on the back seat, her head arced up, breathing hard and holding out her hands in defense as she watches me. She licks her lips, out of breath, with a hint of a smile.
Don't, please,
she begs.
I'm sorry.
Her body shakes with a silent, nervous laugh, but I can't move. The sight of her there on the seat, her breasts rising and falling, and her thighs slightly spread with one foot on the floor and the other leg arched up, sends my body reeling. Jesus. Sweat, or water, I'm not sure, glistens across her chest, and a blush covers her cheeks. I step up and set the hose, still locked on, onto the roof. The water spills in a wide, steady stream down the front windshield. I hold her eyes. You got me wet, I point out. Fair's fair. Her breathing falters and she stares at me, frozen. Will she run away? I lean down, bowing my head into the cab and hovering over her body, holding myself up with my hands. Her eyes flash to the windshield. She's probably nervous we can be seen, but the water distorts the view, creating a blur. She arches up on her hands, meeting me halfway as her hot little breaths fan across my lips. Her eyes fall to my mouth.
What does it feel like?
she asks quietly, reaching a timid finger out and touching my lip piercing. I groan, challenging her. You tell me. She locks eyes with me as if scared, but then her gaze falls again to the piercing. Opening her mouth just slightly, she darts out her tongue and flicks the ring. I groan again, unable to keep my eyes from falling shut. The wet heat from that small spot filters across my face, down my neck, and swoops low in my stomach, making my fingers dig into the leather seats. Her breath hits my skin again, and I open my eyes to see hers watching me intently as she goes back for more. Her tongue slowly traces a trail over the ring before she darts out and bites my lip around it, pulling the whole thing in her mouth. My skin burns and tingles everywhere, and I nearly lose the fucking strength to hold myself up. Her eyes stay open, watching me pant and groan at everything she's doing. She sucks and bites and licks and tugs as I just hover there, not moving and not kissing back as I let her explore. A horn honks, but I barely register it. Mason, she whispers, running her lips over the ring again and again, snaking a hand around the back of my neck. Mason. I reach out and splay a hand across her stomach, finally taking her in my hands. I want her to say my name. Damn it, I want to hear my name from her lips right now. Yo, idiot! A car horn honks again, and I blink, realizing someone is here. Where's my girl at? Ah, shit. Ryan pulls away, hearing Trey's voice too, and stares up at me, a hint of fear in her eyes. I glance out the window, seeing the blue blur of his Camaro sitting in front of the bay. I can't see him, though, so he can't see us through the water. If he could, I'm sure I would have felt him before I saw him. I look down at Ryan, still feeling the desire roll off her. She's right here, Burroughs. My voice is so low, only Ryan can hear me as I run my hand across her stomach. And she feels really good. Ryan bites her bottom lip and shakes her head, pleading. Hello, wake up, asshole! Trey barks again. I stare down at Ryan. Are you wet now? And I climb off her and out of the truck, shooting her a smirk. Stay down. Slamming the door closed, I see Trey sitting in his car with his window down. The rain is still pouring and the clouds have grown darker. I grab the hose and shut it off, hanging it up. She bailed, I bark. Walked home, now fuck off. He laughs, shaking his head. Don't worry, man. You can have her all you want after our baseball game against Thunder Bay next week. I like a little pussy after I win, so until then, you wait your turn. What the fuck did he just say? I watch as he speeds off and disappears down the road, curling my fists. I will not wait my turn. He can't have her.
Chapter 9. Ryan. I lick my lips, feeling the warm metal graze my tongue. Misha. But then I blink awake, my room coming into view and the fog in my head slowly clearing. Misha? I was kissing Mason in my dream. Why did I call him Misha? Damn. I take my pillow out from under my head and cover my face with it. I'm a mess. I'd fantasized about Misha before, in one of my kinky alternate realities where he writes me dirty letters and finally sneaks into my room, and that's the first time I meet him, when he's sliding into me. But he never has a face. I always got the impression he was tall and dark, though, but I never knew for sure. I guess after everything last night, and how this new guy is in my head now, my brain made a connection. My fantasies finally found Misha a face. Taking the pillow off my head, I drop it to the side, yesterday's events playing in my mind. I bring up my hand, twisting it around to see the remnants of his Sharpie on the inside of my finger. I glance at my chalk wall ahead and see where I added shame to the bottom of the list. Alone. Empty. Fraud. Shame. The words hurt, but last night I realized something. There's more I'm not seeing. The first word, alone, was written in his bunk at the cove. That's not about me. It has to do with something else. These words mean something else. And then the car and the fight. I'd walked out to the parking lot after school, immediately spotting Mason putting something in my Jeep. I'd charged down the steps, ready to tell him off, especially after what he did to my scarf. But when I saw what was sitting on the seat of my car, I paused. Of course, it was tacky to give me another woman's scarf, but I was a little thrown off that he would feel guilty enough to want to make up for it in the first place. It was beautiful and soft, and I wanted to keep it. And then the car wash. How excited I felt when he stalked me like I was prey. How the smooth curve of the piercing felt when I slipped the tip of my tongue through the hoop. How he was so patient and not greedy or selfish, just letting me explore. How his hand inched possessively up under my shirt, sending me reeling. I bring my fingers up to my mouth, grazing the tip of one with my tongue. It tickles a little, but it's teasing, too. Did he like it when I did that? I wanted to feel good to him, even if I only admit it to myself. I trail my hand across my cheek and down my neck, wishing it was his hand. Wishing I could go back to last night and not cut him off, making him take me back to school, so I could get in my car and run away. But the truth is, I'm starting to think about him. A lot. And I don't know why. Especially when he's constantly in my face telling me what I'm doing wrong. I've never been in danger of losing my heart to guys like Trey, but with Mason, I find him consuming my attention. I'm always aware of him. And the closer I get to him, the further away from Misha I feel. It almost feels like I'm betraying him. Not that we're romantic, but he has my heart, and I don't want to give it to anyone else. I feel like Mason threatens that. I said I would give Misha a few days, but I need to know. Is he safe? Is he alive? Has he just moved on? Pulling off the covers, I sit up and swing my legs over the side of the bed. I look at the clock and see that it's after 9. It's Saturday. I have the whole day free. I could just drive by. Not like an obsessive stalker girl who just can't take a hint. No, I can just drive by. Make sure the house hasn't burned down or isn't empty, because his father committed some gruesome murder and left town on the run, with Misha and his sister in the middle of the night. Who knows? Maybe I'll see a young guy pulling into the driveway and entering the house, and I'll be able to tell that it's him, and then I'll know that he's alive and well. I don't have to have any more answers than that, do I? Standing up, I throw on a pair of workout shorts, a t-shirt, and a fleece jacket. Pulling my hair up into a messy ponytail, I'm not going to worry about how I look. If I go shower and fix my hair and makeup, I'll be tempted to knock on his door. If I look like shit, then I won't leave my car. After I brush my teeth, I jog down the stairs and swing around the banister, heading into the kitchen. "Morning," my mom says. I look up to see her and Carson sitting at the table, looking through a magazine together. Probably some home renovation thing, because mom wants to expand the garage. I open the refrigerator and pull out a bottle of water. "Morning," I reply. "The principal called last night," my sister's voice rings out. I falter, slowly closing the fridge door and not looking at her. Shit. That's right. Did she tell them about what I did to Mason's truck? Or what I told her I did? Damn it. But no, my mom would have reamed me last night when I got home. She wouldn't have waited until this morning. Plus, I doubt the principal really believed me, but there was little she could do. "She said you're going to the prom with Trey," my mom says, walking over to me in her bathrobe and her hair up in a bun. She empties her coffee cup into the sink. "She wanted to know your favorite color for the corsage. Why didn't you tell us he'd asked you?" "I forgot." I shrug, relaxing a little. "You were gone, and I've been busy. Actually, I didn't feel it was worth mentioning. Popular girl is going to prom with popular guy. My place in the yearbook is secure. But I care so little all of a sudden. I wonder how that happened." She nods, her blue eyes smiling at me as she brushes a flyaway off my cheek. "You're too busy. You leave for college soon. I want to see you." I kiss her on the cheek and grab an apple out of the bowl on the center island. "I'll be home later." "Well, where are you going now?" "To see a friend," I tell her, turning and walking for the foyer. "I'll be back." "Ryan," my mom protests. "Oh, just let her go," my sister grumbles, standing up and carrying her plate to the sink. "Ryan is so busy and important now. We should be grateful when she graces us with her presence." I grab my wallet and keys off the entryway table, clenching my jaw. I don't remember the last time my sister said anything nice to me. Or me to her, for that matter. Carson? My mom warns. What? My sister says. I'm happy for her. At least it's not grade school when she had no friends and I had to take her everywhere with me so she wouldn't be alone. I swallow the bitter taste in my mouth, not looking at her. She always knows what to say to make me feel small again. The smile I can usually force for my mother's sake is pressed down deep in my stomach, contained under a pile of bricks, and the agreeable words I can always spit out don't want to play this time. I'm tired. I walk out the front door and hop in my Jeep before she says anything else. I don't care if it's just his town, just his house, or whatever. I need to see something that's Misha. I drive down the quiet, pristine lanes of Thunder Bay, the wind blowing through the open cab of my Jeep as loose strands of my hair fly wildly around me. The sun flickers through the leaves in the trees above, and the sea air wafts all around, filling my lungs with its fresh scent. Avril Lavigne's Skater Boy plays on the radio, but I don't sing along like I usually do, and I barely notice the slight wheezing coming up from my chest as I gape at the homes and lawns on both sides of me. Holy shit, I'm way out of my league. 2- and 3-story homes with gates and acres and circular driveways bigger than my house stand before me, and the cars that pass by probably cost just as much. Jesus, Misha. Not that my house is shabby, of course. It's more than big enough, and my mother has done a beautiful job decorating it, but these houses are the high life. For once, I'm really glad I'm driving a Jeep so I can blend in. It's the only car in the market that doesn't give away how much or how little you're worth. There are rich and poor Jeep enthusiasts. I continue driving, glancing at the map on my GPS and taking a right on Birch and then a left on Girard. 248 Girard. I've known his address by heart since I was 11. At first I thought, with us being only a half hour away from each other, of course we'd see each other eventually, when we got our licenses and had more freedom. But by the time that day came, we had lives, friends, and obligations, and it seemed to be enough to know we could see each other anytime, if we wanted to. If we wanted to. I pass the houses and read the numbers written on the columns, walls, and gates at their entrances. 212, 224, 236, and then I see it. On the left, with a hedge of trees and two small rock columns featuring a walk-through gate and a drive-through gate, which is currently open. It's a 3-story Tudor-style house, balancing the wood and rock beautifully. And I pull to a stop on the other side of the road to stare at it for a minute. It's quaint and picturesque, but not as massive or pretentious as so many of the homes I saw on the way here. But it does have a fountain in the front. He grew up here. This is where my letters have been coming. No wonder he complains so much, I laugh to myself. It's a great house, but it isn't him at all. Misha, who got suspended for fighting twice, plays the guitar, and thinks that beef jerky and Monster energy drinks make for a healthy breakfast, lives in a house that looks like it could have a butler. I feel my lungs growing heavy and thick, and I take out the extra inhaler I keep in a secret compartment in the console. Spring is here, and my allergies are going haywire. I take 2 puffs, slowly feeling my lungs start to open up again. I check my phone, seeing the time is nearly 10. I can't sit here all day, can I? I look up, noticing a couple of women jogging toward me on the sidewalk, and I hear a kid yelling from somewhere in the neighborhood. I tap my foot against the pedal, suddenly torn. I said I wasn't going to get out of the car, but being this close, possibly only feet away from him, I miss him so much. I need to know what's going on. If I go up to that door, our relationship is over as I know it. Maybe it will go on in some other way when I find out what's wrong with him, but it won't be the same once I see his face. Things will change, and I will have broken what worked. It will be awkward, and he won't have been prepared for me just to show up like this. What if we both just sit there, twiddling our thumbs and not saying anything, because I'm the crazy stalker who hunted him down, and now he feels weird? Screw it, I snap, realizing I'm talking to myself, but I don't care. I rely on him. I have a right to. We've had that commitment for 7 years. If he doesn't want me to show up, then he damn well should have written back and told me it was over. I have a right to know what's going on. Pushing open my door, I hop out of my Jeep and slam it shut. With weak legs and shallow breaths, I jog across the street, pushing my fear out of my head. Don't think, just go. He's driving me crazy, and I need it to end. I just need to know. Walking up the driveway, I dart my eyes around, looking at the windows to see if anyone sees me approaching. I smooth my hair back, readjusting my ponytail as I step up to the door. I should have dressed right. I should be wearing makeup. What if he's home and sees me and starts laughing? I'm a mess. No, Misha knows me. He's the only one who knows the real me. He won't care what I look like. I pull the collar of my shirt away from my body and dip my nose in, sniffing. I shower twice a day, at night because I usually get sweaty at cheer and swim, and in the morning after my workouts, but I didn't have one today. Smells fine, I guess, although my sister did say once that you can't smell yourself. I bring up my hand and rap on the door several times. Then I see a doorbell to the right. Damn it, I should have rung that. It doesn't matter. I fold my arms over my chest, hugging myself, and shift on my feet as I bow my head and close my eyes. Misha, 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 where are you? I hear the door open, and my heart skips a beat.
Yes?
Someone says. I blink up and immediately relax a little, taking in a little more air. It's a man, much older than Misha would be, with graying dark hair and green eyes. His dad? He's wearing a dark blue robe, tied over a full set of pajamas, and embarrassment warms my cheeks. It's a Saturday morning. Maybe he just woke up. Hi. I finally say, unfolding and then folding my arms again. Is, Misha here, by any chance? I see his back straighten a little, as if on guard. No, I'm sorry, he isn't. He replies quietly. He isn't. So, he lives here. This is his house. I don't know why having that confirmed fills me with dread and excitement at the same time. And this guy must be his father. Do you know when he'll be back? I ask as politely as I can. I'm a friend of his. His chest rises with a heavy breath and his gaze falls. I notice his cheeks look sunken, and he has bags under his eyes, as if he's sick or tired or something.
If you're a friend, I'm sure you can call him and find out, he says.
I falter. Yeah, if I were his friend, why wouldn't I have his cell number? Maybe he knows who Ryan is. Maybe I should tell him who I am.
Would you like to leave a message?
He prompts, starting to inch back and preparing to close the door. No, I rush out. Thank you, sir. He nods and swings the door closed. But I shoot my hand out, stopping him. Sir? He looks up, stopping. Is he okay? I ask. I haven't heard from him in a while. His father is silent for a moment, watching me, before answering with a resolute tone.
He's fine.
And then he closes the door, and I stand on the front step, frozen and confused. What does that mean? I guess I should be happy, right? He's fine, isn't he? He lives here. His father says he's not home right now, which means he's home sometimes, so he hasn't moved or died or joined the army. But I don't feel happy. He's fine. He lives here. He's not home right now. Everything's normal. Nothing's changed. So if he hasn't moved or died or joined the army, then why the hell isn't he writing me anymore? I spin around and charge for my Jeep, knowing what Ryan, Misha's friend, would do. She'd never give up. She'd keep writing with undying loyalty, trusting that he has a good reason. But the Ryan that Misha doesn't know, the survivor, is taking hold right now, and she doesn't like being played with. You know my address, asshole. Use it or don't. I'm not holding my breath anymore. Can you believe Mason Laurent? Lila sneers, standing next to my locker as Ten texts on his phone beside her. She stares over her shoulder at Mason and a group of guys on the other side of the hallway. He probably got kicked out of his last school for fighting, and Trey's getting tons of shit on Facebook for that fight. She narrows her eyes on Mason. Definitely hot, but what an asshole. He should be arrested. Trey's getting shit for that fight? I keep my smirk to myself. You mean for getting his ass kicked? I glance over at Mason, who's surrounded by four other guys, all of them laughing and joking around as if they've been best friends forever. Mason smiles at one of them and shakes his head, sucking a straw between his lips as he takes a drink from a 7-Eleven cup. I feel my cheeks warm. Those lips. I couldn't get enough of them Friday night, and he didn't even kiss me. What if Lila and Ten found out right now that he had me in the backseat of his car, and I didn't want to stop? He seems to sense me watching him, because he turns his head toward me, both of us locking gazes across the crowded hall. His green eyes pin me to my spot, something hot flashing in them, and I suddenly can't move a step. I spin back around, throwing my books in my locker. Yeah, well, I reply, forcing my voice flat and bored. He seems to be finding his crowd. Yeah, the bottom of the barrel, Lila jokes, looking at the guys Mason is standing with. All those guys will be in jail in a year. They seem like the type. Mason has been here less than a week and already has a crowd of friends, all of whom seem to fit his style. A few piercings here, some tattoos there, and probably all of them well-versed on the bail process. So, I heard you ditched him at the car wash? Ten tosses his gum into the gray trash can against the wall between my locker and the classroom door. You're so bad. Yeah, well, I pull out my phone so I can take it to lunch. My time is precious. He better get used to manual labor anyway. Lila and Ten snort, all of us shooting amused glances over at the delinquents. Friday, Mason didn't have any friends, and now? I'll bet anything they came to him, too. Not the other way around. Now everyone knows him. He keeps looking at you, Ten says. I pretend disinterest as I cast a quick glance over to Mason. My pulse starts to race. He stands, leaning his back against the locker, and his eyes are on me. Challenging, amused, hot, like he hasn't forgotten where we left off at all. He can look all he wants, I say, slamming my locker door and meeting his eyes as I speak to my friends. He's never gonna get it. The corner of Mason's mouth lifts in a smile across the hall, like he knows I'm talking shit about him. But if he does, Ten chimes in, make sure I'm the first to know, okay? I want details. I'm going to prom with Trey. I hood my eyes at Ten. Mason Laurent can admire from afar and enjoy the view. Both of my friends laugh, but just then, something hits the garbage can and a stream of clear liquid shoots out and right for us. Soda splashes onto the floor. I gasp as it hits my legs and causes Lila and Ten to jump back as sticky fluid hits their ankles and shoes. Asshole! Lila screams across the hallway. Mason pushes off the lockers, still holding his straw as he chews on it, smirking. His friends follow, all of them chuckling. He must have thrown his soda from over there into the garbage can. Prick. Sorry, Rox. Mason pulls the straw out of his mouth, a cocky look in his eyes as he stares at me. Didn't mean to make you dirty. His words are filled with innuendo, and his friends laugh louder around him. I flex my jaw, dying to slap that smile off his face as he and his new friends walk away, down the hall and toward the lunchroom. He never fails to make an impression, does he? Jerk, Lila grits out. I'm going to the bathroom to clean up. She brushes past me and Ten follows her, shaking his head with an amused smile. We'll meet you in the lunchroom, he says as he passes. I turn and reopen my locker, taking out the cashmere scarf Mason ruined. It's already dirty, so what does it matter? I dry off my legs and ankles and throw it back in the locker, making a mental note to take it home tonight and get it cleaned. The bell rings and I head to the cafeteria, actually feeling hungry enough to leave my books in my locker today and eat something. But when I pass the physics lab, I see something dark come at me on my left, and I barely have time to realize it's Mason before he shoves me through the door. I stumble into the empty classroom, sucking in a breath as he shuts the door and advances on me, backing me up into the wall. My heart pounds in my chest, and butterflies flutter in my stomach, but I stamp it down. I look at him with my hands on my hips and my chin up, forcing myself to look calm. He stares down at me, not saying anything as his chest touches mine. The room is dark except for the dim light coming through the windows, and muffled sounds of laughter and talking drift through the wall from the lunchroom. He's close. Everything heats up under my skin, and his breath falls across my lips. This cheerleading outfit is fucking lame, he says. I cock my head. Funny, 'cause you couldn't seem to take your eyes off me in it a minute ago. His eyes drop to my lips, and he leans in, both of our breaths turning shallow, and I can almost taste him. I lick my lips, and he loses it. He reaches down, grabs the back of my thighs, and hauls me up, and I wrap my arms and legs around him, letting out a small whimper. Yes. I part my lips, running them over the lip ring and savoring the feel as he groans and digs his fingers into my thighs. I tighten my legs around him, needing to feel him. Bitch, he whispers. Loser. And when I dart out the tip of my tongue to lick the little piece of metal again, he's done being patient. Mason Laurent slams his lips down on mine, moving hard over my mouth and brushing his tongue with mine, the heat and taste sending my mind reeling. I stop breathing. I don't care. I just go in for more and more. He bites my bottom lip, moving his hands to my ass and squeezing, and I let out a little cry, the feel of him driving me mad. I don't want people to hear us, but right now, I don't care about anything. My eyes close as his lips and teeth move over my neck, sending shivers down my spine. Heat gathers low in my belly as I tighten my thighs around him. I want to be closer. He presses his groin into me, and I come back down, taking his lips and dipping my tongue in, teasing him like that every time I come in for a kiss. "Keep doing that," he gasps. I hear laughter outside and jump, twisting my head toward the door. But he doesn't let my head leave the game. He reaches over and twists the lock, and then carries me over to a chair at a lab table and sits down, keeping me straddling him. Grabbing my hips, he brings me chest to chest. "Did you think about me this weekend?" He bites my lip and lets go. "Hmm?" The feel of his teeth sends my stomach flipping, but I bite out anyway. "You wish." I press my body into him and sink my lips into his as he pulls my hips in again. "You were talking shit to your dumb friends, weren't you?" He pants, his kisses and nibbles quick and teasing. "I never wanted to teach someone a lesson as badly as I wanted to teach you one just now." He pulls me again, my clit grinding against the bulge in his jeans. "I should have walked over, flipped up your skirt, and started going down on you right there, so they all know what you really like." I started rolling my hips, slow and taunting, but when he darts out and tries to catch my lips again, I pull away, teasing him. "You don't know what I like." "I don't think I'm going to disappoint." His threat lingers between us, and I look down, seeing the tip of a tattoo coming out of his shirt from his shoulder and drifting up just about an inch onto his neck. I can't tell what it is, but I lean down and kiss it, trailing my lips slowly up his neck to his ear. "Sorry to eat and run," I whisper, "but my friends are waiting for me." I don't want to leave, but I have to. I move to get up, but he yanks me back down. "That's not how this works, princess." His eyes challenge me, and I feel his fingers squeeze around my thighs. My heart beats faster. "Someone could come in," I warn. "And what? Find out I'm your dirty little secret?" "Mace," but he leans up and snatches my lips, cutting me off. He kisses me deep, and all of a sudden I just want to wrap my arms around him again. "Don't call me that when we're like this," he whispers against my lips. "Don't call him Mason?" "Why?" I ask. "Just don't." He shrugs me off and stands up, forcing me to climb off his lap. "Now, do me a favor and go in the lunchroom and sit in Trey's lap, would you? I want to look while your fucking prom date has no clue that I just had that ass grinding my cock a minute ago." He gives me a cruel smile, and I inhale a deep breath, raising my chin and trying to look unfazed. But my heart pounds like a jackhammer. What an asshole. Before I can reply with a witty, sarcastic, or utterly childish remark, he walks past me and out the door, while the sound of the students in the lunchroom floods in. An ache digs into the back of my throat, but I refuse to cry. Turning, I look out the window and see my reflection in the glass. I blink away the tears and check my face to make sure my mascara and lips aren't smeared, checking that my hair is smooth and perfect again, making sure the girl who got out a few minutes ago is tucked back inside, down deep. I take a deep breath and walk out the door, joining my friends in the cafeteria.
Chapter 10. Misha. Sitting in an empty Ferris wheel car, I tip my head back and close my eyes, letting the night wind blow across my face. The ocean waves in the distance curl and crash ashore, filling the darkness with a steady presence at my back as a car above me creaks in the wind, the rest having been rusted silent a long time ago. The camping lamp I've been using in the room sits under my propped-up legs, and I hold a pen in my hand and a notepad on my lap. 57 times I didn't call. 57 letters I didn't send. 57 stitches to breathe again, and then I fucking pretend. I open my eyes and jot down the last two lines, barely able to see what I'm writing in the near darkness. Doesn't matter, I guess. I can write it tonight and read it tomorrow. I've been writing this song for 2 years. Ever since Ryan started talking about the cheerleader in some of her letters. I got stuck halfway through because I wasn't sure where the story was going, just that I needed to tell it. I had Ryan's impression through her words, but I couldn't get further than that. But leaving school 2 days ago, after finally having her in my arms in the lab, I needed to write. I was feeling things. She knows how to work me, how to drive me insane, acting like I'm dirt under her shoe in public, but like she can't get enough of me in private. Her tongue and mouth, the little obsession she has with my lip ring, the way she grinded into me, and if it weren't for a couple layers of clothes, I would have been inside her. Yeah, that prissy little act drops like a bad habit, and she can get so hot. I want to take off everything except that lame-ass skirt and see how every inch of her feels. If her whole stuck-up crew knew how their little princess melts for me. But I look up, staring out at the theme park and realizing, no, not for me, for Mason. Damn, I can't keep this up. I have to leave, or I have to tell her. She'll never forgive me for betraying her like this, for being right under her nose and damn near seducing her. I'm ashamed. I didn't guess you were here a long time ago. A voice calls out, and I jerk, looking down at the ground. Dane stands below with a flashlight in his hand. I watch him start climbing the beams up to where I sit about 5 cars off the ground and let out a sigh. I'm working. For the first time in months, I'm writing. Just my luck. You and your cousin loved this place as kids, he yells up. I should have known you'd be hiding here. He crawls up past the empty cars and heaves himself over the beam where my car sits. The wheel creaks with the extra weight, but it doesn't budge. Years of rain and moist sea air have taken care of that. He takes a seat, and I notice he's wearing our band's black t-shirt. Our name, Cipher Corps, with some artwork Dane designed, is on the left side of the chest. I have a few at home. Even Annie has some, which she used to sleep in. I see Dane's eyes fall to my notepad, and then he raises them to me, the wheels in his head probably turning. You got something there for me? He prods, meaning lyrics. I laugh to myself, tossing him the book. What the hell? Let him tell me it sucks so I can give up and we can go to Styx and get drunk instead. He barely looks at the pad, though. He eyes me hesitantly as if he's searching for words. Your dad isn't looking too good, man, he says, keeping his tone even. The stores are closed and no one sees him anymore. He misses you.